I hope people can enjoy it, just like you said, from just a straight up adventure story about monsters. But I hope they, you know, find something helpful through the process as well.
That's Michael Regina, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Michael Regina is the author and illustrator of four previous graphic novels, including The Sleepover and the Adamsville Trilogy. He joins us to talk about his latest middle grade horror graphic novel, Deepwater Creek. Michael, welcome to Conversations.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Excited.
Tell us about the inspiration for this latest graphic novel.
Well, there's the personal and then the sort of taste inspirations, right? So from a personal standpoint, it was really born out of experience, I think, a decent amount of hardship and watching people I love go through either trauma or loss of loved ones, this sort of thing. And in my me trying to grapple with how do I help them? And sort of my own tendency to get maybe own too much of what that means, right? Like that I can't necessarily fix things for people. So how do I get involved? So that was sort of what I was feeling emotionally. So from the autobiographical standpoint, I think that's important. But then thematically, I was thinking a lot about stuff like Stand By Me, this sort of like road adventure with a group of kids to do something that they think is important, but also changes them. Or Jaws, obviously, which is like my favorite movie of all time. And just and trying to capture the sense of adventure that has and scary. But then the thing I was really trying to add on top of all that was, can I do something that feels a bit like H.P. Lovecraft, but for children? I'd never really seen that done in a way that that I really enjoyed and I thought executed on it well. So it just felt like this weird blend of concepts. And it took a long time to feel like I got it right. But I'm pretty pleased with, I think, how it turned out.
Tell us about the plot here. What are readers going to find?
So the story is about two brothers, Wade and Andrew, who love fishing with their family and their friends out on the river in their backyard. And one day when they're out fishing, they catch something huge and it pulls Andrew overboard. He becomes pretty traumatized from this event and sort of never wants to go back out on the water again. No one believes what he saw or what they both think they saw underwater. So Wade hatches this sort of adventure to try to prove that this thing exists, one, so that other people will believe them, and then two, so that maybe Andrew can have a sense of closure, that he might overcome this trauma that he's incurred because of this. And then, you know, from there, it just sort of spirals out into, I think, increasingly epic senses of dread as it goes.
And this relationship between the brothers goes back to what you were talking about in terms of the inspiration, that Wade is concerned about his brother's mental state after this encounter with what they believe might be a monster, and he doesn't know what to do and how he can help his brother.
Yeah, he, you know, a tendency I have as a person, I'm maybe getting too into the weeds about like my own thing, but my tendency as a person is to go, what can I do to fix it? You know, and so I'm just like, if we could just do this thing, we could fix the problem. You know, this person will be okay. And I've had to learn over time, like, I can't necessarily do that. That doesn't always go well, you know? And so Wade is wrestling with that. He wants desperately to have his brother back, but he doesn't know how to accomplish it and often gets in his own way in the process of doing it. And so just was wrestling with that in my own life. And it was a tough lesson to learn personally. And then to even put into a book and go, how do I make a book about this that, you know, is not too heavy, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
So we see this book, it unfolds, you know, sort of like a movie with all the images that go along with the dialogue. But then Wade is the narrator as we go through this book as well.
Yeah, I mean, actually it was supposed to be a much bigger part of the story. So kind of looking at what was cut on the draft room floor, one of the early drafts of this book were really sort of more of like an older version of Wade looking back on the past and this event. And so it was sort of told, like, again, I was talking about that Stand By Me structure where you start sort of in the future with an adult version of a character and he's thinking back on memory. And that was the way the book was supposed to initially be structured. And it just never was clicking in the way I wanted it to be. And so eventually it became more of just a narrative element to try to get Wade's perspective in moments where I thought maybe it was important to. But yeah, it was supposed to be a much bigger part of the story, actually. But I had to kind of scale it back because I got a feel for what the story wanted.
So as you pointed out, part of the inspiration was Jaws. So instead of a shark, we have this other kind of monster they're dealing with. And at a certain point of the book, one of the characters is about to quote a line from yes. Jaws, and the other character says, "Don't you dare."
That's right. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to ignore, you know, its influences, but I want to poke fun at it while not going too out of pocket. You know what I mean?
This is a middle grade novel. So for what age group is this book intended?
I mean, middle grade is typically classified 8 and up, you know, but I would say, 10 is probably a pretty safe age because of the creepier aspects of the story. But I always sort of tell people, you know, it depends on the kid. But ultimately, my writing philosophy is I put kids in a story and then I try to forget that it was that's that. You know, I want to treat them like normal people dealing with normal problems. And so I hope in that process that kids don't feel talked down to and adults feel like they can still enjoy it. So that, you know, personal balance of what I'm striking for. But from a content level, yeah, we're looking at like age 10 and up.
It's an engaging story, but as you mentioned earlier, there are a lot of themes in here and kind of metaphors for different things that you are going through and also just issues that kids face. So let's talk about some of those themes, including, you know, facing your fears and supporting each other, et cetera. What are some of the other things you address in this story?
Yeah, I mean, definitely facing your fears, supporting each other. You know, there's that sort of trope, like to conquer your fear, you must face your fear. So thinking about that. So I do think, you know, Wade in some respects is right. Like he's right in what he thinks needs to happen, but he's maybe wrong in his application of how he's going about it, you know, or too forceful. But then also beyond that, one of the things that I think couples with that when you're dealing with somebody who is going through something that you can't necessarily fix, right, is this belief that and a hope in something bigger than yourself. Like at a certain point, there's like a surrender, right, of like, I can't fix this. I don't know how to fix this. So where does, you know, an aspect of faith come in, which is, you know, this discussion of like, there's always a bigger fish and talking about this sort of thing. Like there's something, I believe in that. I believe there's something bigger than us. And so to some degree, when you're dealing with a person or a struggle that you cannot particularly fix, there is a leaning into, I think, yeah, something bigger than yourself. So I think that's another aspect that I wanted to highlight because at least for me personally, it's the aspect that allows me to let go, you know, allows me to say, okay, I can't necessarily solve this, but I'm hoping something else can, you know, because I just maybe can't change somebody, you know what I mean?
And not give away a spoiler, but there's also some symbolism around light in a couple of different ways in this novel, especially toward the end and about trusting the light, even though you don't quite understand it. I think there are a lot of different layers that you can enjoy it as just an engaging kind of horror story, but also there's a lot else to think about in this book.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And that sort of light darkness thing is directly what I'm talking about in the discussions about theme. You know, my favorite kind of filmmakers are guys like M. Night Shyamalan, these writers who I think do such a great job of layering in something bigger in talking about big subjects while still trying to tell immensely human stories, you know? So I want above all things for it to be an immensely fun ride. But then storytelling often for me is a place where I can work through whatever thing I'm working through. I enjoy stories like that quite a bit, you know? And so, yeah, I hope people can enjoy it, just like you said, from just a straight up adventure story about monsters. But I hope they, you know, find something helpful through the process as well. There's a writer named Brian McDonald, a writing instructor. He often says, you know, writing conveys, or stories convey survival information. And I believe in that. I think that that's very true. And so it's a philosophy I carry as I try to work on every story I write.
In the back of the book, you have a behind the scenes section. I want to talk about that in just a moment, but I'm also wondering about behind the scenes, sort of the creative process for you, because, you know, sometimes when graphic novels are created, there's a writer and an illustrator that work separately. In your case, you're a cartoonist. You do both. So do you think that gives you a creative advantage in putting these stories together?
I don't know if it's an advantage necessarily. I mean, it's born out of It's kind of strange. It's like when I was a kid, what I wanted to be was the artist. I wanted to be the artist for comic books. And then I could never really find friends who would write and that I could illustrate from. And then I always felt this like strong desire that a story needed to be a certain thing for me to want to illustrate it. Maybe it's a control thing. I don't know. But it was definitely more like what has happened as I've gotten older is that I love writing kind of more than I love the art. And the art serves the function of communicating the writing. So if anything, I think it allows me to ensure that a story I want to tell gets told, right, as a comic book, as opposed to needing necessarily additional partners to make that happen, which can sometimes really stall out people who want to make comics, but either don't have friends who write or friends who draw that are willing to help pick up those batons and run with it. It at least allows me to know that if there's something I want to do, I can get around to it if I can make the time and the effort.
Well, in that behind-the-scenes section, you note that the idea of the kids and kind of the image of the kids came to you quickly, and that stayed the same. But the monster evolved over time. So tell us a little bit about the influences that brought that monster together as we see it in this story.
It's always funny how stories sort of evolve and change over time. So the initial ideas were much more this sort of like version of like a kid horror version of like Life of Pi or something like that, where these kids are on this adventure and there's a lot of fantasy elements and mermaids and everything and monster fish. And so the main monster that they were trying to get to was not necessarily a fish. It was we have to get to this thing. And then there's a creature at the center of this whole creek. And if we get to this creature, he'll help us. But eventually I was like, I'm more interested in the idea of telling a monster fish story. And so to that degree, the designs had to shift towards this idea of making it more fish-like as opposed to more of like a kaiju or a giant monster or this sort of thing. So the story kind of had to start getting really focused because it was not about that for a long time. It felt more, like I said, more of like a fantasy realism thing. And I'll attribute a lot of that to my editor too. When he saw a lot of the early designs, he was like, you know, I think maybe if we skewed it more this direction, it might get more of that heart of what you're aiming for. And so it was just a process. It was an idea that when I went to work with them, I had done a 2-book deal with Penguin from my first book, The Sleepover, and we were supposed to do something different with this story. And I just couldn't figure that story out. And so I was like, hey, but I have this idea about kids on a fishing adventure and monsters and all this sort of thing. Can I do that instead? And we kind of figured that story out together as we try to figure out what is the best way to tell that story. It was never like you have to change it. It was like, well, what if you considered something like this? And I moved more and more towards the idea of it being a fish story at the end of the day.
There is a question I like to ask authors of fiction, and it's this. If you could spend a day in real life with one of the characters from your novel, who would it be and why?
Oh, that is a great question. I mean, I think as a dad, I'd probably Wade's dad just because, you know, I feel a lot of what he feels in the story. So, you know, that's an aspect we haven't talked much about, but part of the reason they go on this adventure is because the dad is afraid to put the kids back out there. You know, he doesn't want to go. And that's the aspect of me now that's wrestling with like, hey, my kids, how do I support them even though I'm terrified for their safety or whatever the case might be? So I'd probably have fun fishing with them. It'd be fun, I think. But yeah, I think him, he'd be fun to hang out for a day.
Another thing I noticed that you've done a certain amount of world building that translates from one book to another in this book, but there's you know, that trilogy of books about Adamsville.
That's right. Adamsville was my first graphic novel series. I self-published it. The Lion Webtoon website featured it on their site, so they ran the whole run. It's no longer up there. But yeah, there is a shared universe of things that I am building. It's not super heavy-handed. If anything, I think they're their own story streams, right? I could absolutely see there being more stories in Deepwater Creek. I think, pun intended, we just scratched the surface of like, what is this thing? Where are these creatures coming from? What is the mythology of that place? And I would love to potentially tell more stories there down the line. We'll see if that ever happens. I think there's more stories to tell for sure. But I like that idea of bigger world building stuff. It's fun.
And that was going to lead to my next question is, what is next for you?
Oh, I can't talk too much about it yet. We're literally getting ready to start pitching it very, very soon. But what I can say is that my goal has been, what I've been thinking about for years, even before Deepwater Creek, was the idea of doing a middle grade anthology series. So something in the vein of Goosebumps, Twilight Zone, Are You Afraid of the Dark, but for young readers. And I've never seen really that done with graphic novels. Obviously, there's plenty of novel versions of that or TV shows. And so I wanted to give it a shot. The aspect of it that is going to be interesting is I'm attempting to do something where you could read any individual volume on its own, but if you're paying attention, there's a big narrative that's happening. And so how do you do an anthology that's also interconnected? Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I was just working on the cover for the book pitch this morning. So hopefully more soon, I hope.
This middle grade graphic novel is Deepwater Creek by Michael Regina. Michael, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed talking about it.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.